there's one factor that separates the somewhat successful from the highly successful: setting goals and sticking to them. In this episode, Gail Dobie speaks with Liz Elting, co-founder and former CEO of one of the world's biggest translation services providers, TransPerfect, as well as author of Dream Big and Win. Gail asks Liz about selling her $1 billion business and her keys to success that helped her build that business. There is plenty more to love in this episode, so settle in and enjoy.
So, Liz, it is such a pleasure to have you here on the podcast. We are delighted. And I just finished reading Dream Big and Win, and I can't wait to talk to you about it because the book was so insightful and so inspiring. And I think for any of our listeners, of which most of our listeners are women, I think this is really going to resonate with our listeners today. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Gail. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Well, you know, one of the things that I thought was so interesting in reading your book is how many things you had to overcome in the course of time in building your business. And I remember that one of the things I was so inspired about was that you, when you were in college, started your business out of your dorm room. And you had a partner at that time. And was this your long-term partner in your business?
So actually what happened is I had gone to college, majored in languages, which is my passion. And then shortly after college, I worked in Venezuela, which was wonderful for me because I was passionate about languages. And then I came to New York and I was 21 years old and I worked actually at another company. So I worked at a company that I found that was a translation company. So it was my dream company because I loved languages and I wanted to be in business. So I worked at another company for 3 years after college and then went back to school, got my MBA from NYU, and then worked very briefly in a finance job, which I talk about in chapter one of my book. And then after only 6 weeks, left that job and started TransPerfect out of an NYU business school dorm room. So that was just how it all happened. But you asked about my business partner. I can tell you about that. That was an interesting situation because as I mentioned, I had loved languages. I actually studied four languages by the time I had graduated from high school, majored in languages in college, and then worked at another translation company. And I lived in five countries. So languages were my thing. I lived with someone, a guy who was my boyfriend, and then he later even became my fiance, and we lived together for 5 years and ultimately broke up. But when I had the idea to start the company, because I was not happy at my finance job and I had experience in the industry, the translation industry, and I knew I loved it, but I had an idea on how it could be done differently and better and all of that, I said to him, I'd like to do this. And he said, wow, I'd love to do it with you. And he was a year behind me at business school. So he was still in his second year of business school and I had graduated and we started together as 50-50 partners. So that's really how it got started, how we got started with our company.
Wow. And it was, I believe you started, was it 91 when you started the business?
92 close. Yes, 92. So oh, wow.
It's been a while. And you built this business to $1 billion?
Yeah. When I sold after 26 years in business, I basically, we built it along with our team into the world's largest language solutions company with offices in over 100 cities around the world. And it was valued actually in the last couple of years at as much as $1.4 billion in revenue. I ended up selling in 2018. So after 26 years as an entrepreneur running that company, I sold. And yes, it's a $1 billion company.
That is so crazy. Did you have dreams that you were going to build a $1 billion company?
Well, that's a great question because yes, I mean, who thinks about that exactly? But I will tell you, when I left my job in finance, which was a big, big risk, not because it was the end all be all job, but just because I had my MBA. My parents had funded my MBA, and I thought, I'm going to put that aside and start a translation company. I thought, well, and this was in 1992, as we said, there were thousands of other translation companies out there at the time, but they were tiny. They were between typically one in five people. It was a very fragmented industry, mom and pop industry. So I thought, if I'm going to do what a lot of other people have done, I want to build the biggest and the best. So it was a goal, but you know, it's one thing to have a goal and it's another thing for it actually to come true. And but I did have the big goal because I just figured if I'm going to do it, I want to dream big and win.
Which of course is your book. It's so great.
Right. And hence the name of the book. But it could have happened differently. I mean, my timing is great. We found great people, hired them, trained them, developed them, and retained them. And we all built the company together. So there's some luck involved too with all everything going right to make those dreams come true.
Well, I think luck has a place in business, and I think it has a place in life, but there's nothing that will replace somebody having the background, the education, the drive, the fortitude to really build this kind of a business. And I remember reading in the book that you had many times that you were working all night. You had 100-hour weeks. You put a lot of work into this business.
Oh, yes. Blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah, I mean, heart and soul, absolutely. I mean, in the early days, it was 100, 120 hours a week. So I don't mean to say that you just need luck, but I think you try to, everything else plays a role, right? A passion, talent, hard work, timing. But then hopefully you get a little lucky too. But absolutely, I'm a big believer in it's so much about grit and just staying in there and working hard and sacrificing, putting aside the creature comforts, your social life, and doing this for an extended period of time, but deriving pleasure from what you're doing by the purpose it has, by the goals, achieving your goals, and surrounding yourself with a team that's like-minded and for a period of time, enjoyable to be with. So it's sort of a work hard mentality, and then play hard as the goals are accomplished.
So you also are a mom, you have two sons, and I know they're really important to you. You'd take them to the desert island if you were stranded. So just thinking about how you have really dedicated yourself to building an incredibly successful business and you get it to the point of sale. And somehow in there, you're also a mom and taking care of kids and trying to raise them to be great men. How do you do that? How did you find the ability to balance all this in your life?
Well, thank you for asking, because obviously this is a super important subject and one of my favorite subjects, very near and dear to my heart. I'm still figuring it out. I think it's tough being a working mom. My heart goes out to every working mom, and I know a lot of them, and I worked with a lot of them. And I think it's very challenging. I think it's challenging when your kids are young, because you have your work. And if you're an entrepreneur, often you don't have a backup for yourself. Even when we had many more people, hundreds of people, thousands of people, we didn't quite have it set up right. So you feel like you have to be at work, but you want to be with your kids too. So it's a constant choice you have to make. And I think it's tough. And I think I learned along the way. In the early days, I struggled so much. I didn't take any maternity leave. I would have loved to, but unfortunately our company was not set up for that. And that's a whole other conversation, but we should have been. We should have had a great family leave policy, or maternity leave, paternity leave policy, whatever you want to call it. I also should have had a backup that I could trust to handle my work, as should everybody in every job. Succession planning is critical, but as a mother, you need that so you can go on that maternity leave. And so a lot of lessons were learned. And I think people need to work at companies that have great family leave policies. And if it's their own companies, they need to make sure they set it up so they can step away. So anyway, I struggled with that in the early days. I felt like I had a lot of balls in the air. And I often say, okay, you have a lot of balls in the air, but make sure you're going to drop some on both sides, at work and at home for sure. But make sure you don't drop the glass ones. And of course, at home comes first, right? You can't drop any glass ones at home. So that's the priority above all, if it comes down to the two with those glass balls. But I then did learn over time to compartmentalize, whereby when I was at work, I did everything I could to be all in every minute. After I dropped one of my sons at school, or both my sons, I was all in at work, totally focused, all about results, intense. And then at the end of the day, left, shut down, and got home and tried to make it all about them. And staying off my phone and staying off my computer until they went to bed. And then doing something similar on weekends, you know, where it's family time. And I think it's easier said than done, because with the phones these days, I mean, people often feel they need to be on it 24/7, but you really have to shut down in it during family time and be all in for your family. And I learned that I needed to do that for myself and my own happiness, and in order to bring them up but also for our employees. That's what they needed to see me doing. That's what they needed to see their manager, if it wasn't me doing, or else they wouldn't want to be at our company. The ones that were moms or about to be moms, or dads for that matter. So that was a learning experience. And I think it's hard. And I think we all just do the best we can, but we need to make sure we find a way to give our kids everything we can while we have these exciting careers. And it's a challenge, believe me. I think there isn't one right answer. I mean, anyone will say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I have two single moms on my team, and they're in leadership positions. So for me, I see them struggle with their kids. One had a kid that she had to go pick up from school yesterday in the middle of the day. So it takes a lot of balancing and a lot of fortitude to be able to handle a really demanding job and also do a good job raising your kids.
It does. And you feel guilty, and because you can't be, you can't be at home every minute like some moms choose to do. And then the same at work. I mean, I worked alongside a lot of men who would go out every night, or we would have these company trips set up, and I felt times like I needed to be at every one, whether it was sales conference, production conference, big company conferences where we were training our people, motivating our people, where they were networking. And in the later years, I determined I don't have to be at every single one of those because I need to be with my kids too. So it's really figuring it out when. And so I think what it is important for working moms to remember, and I've said this before, but I felt guilty as a working mom because I worked while a lot of the other parents at my son's schools didn't, because maybe it's the nature of where I live. I live on the Upper East Side in Manhattan, beautiful area, but not all the women chose to work or had to work. And my son said to me recently, he said, "Mom, I remember when you used to walk me to school every day when I was in elementary school, and when you walked me to day camp when I was little. And then you dropped me off, and there you were in your corporate dress, and you had your heels in your bag. And I saw many of the other moms there in their gym clothes, and they were going out for coffee." He said, "I looked at you and I admired you, and I was so proud of you. And I'd love to marry someone just like you." And I love sharing that because I felt guilty as a working mom the way so many of us do. But often our kids appreciate us for it. I mean, and I think a lot of moms have similar stories like that, whether it's their daughters saying it to them and how proud they are of them, or their sons. So I think that's an important thing to remember too.
Well, you did a lot of things that were hard and you did them well. And I loved what you talked about in the book too, about how important accountability is. And so accountability and risk taking, I think they're a little bit combined. So why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Okay. Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think starting the company can be a risk no matter where you're starting from, whether you're starting your career or you're giving up a career. And so definitely there's risk involved, but it's a risk not to do it. Because if you'd rather be doing it, if you have an idea, you need to go for it. But then in addition to say, I want to build the world's largest translation company, or I want to start my own business and live the life I've always dreamed of. In order to make it successful, you need to nail down what your goal is and then say, okay, to accomplish this goal, what actions do I need to take every day? Or I mean, certainly every month, every week, every day to accomplish this goal. And then hold yourself accountable for making sure you take these actions, because, you know, a lot of people have big dreams, but then they get distracted. They don't hold themselves to goals. And I think it's so much about accountability and holding yourself to those goals. Actually, Warren Buffett has a great quote that I put in my book where the concept is, you know, the difference between a person who is pretty much does average in life and does incredibly well is simply discipline. You know, the discipline to hold yourself accountable for your goals and making sure, you know, as I said, you have those goals. And another quote or another stat I mention in my book is only 3% of people actually have goals and write them down and really, you know, talk about their goals and all of that. And those 3% end up earning more than 10 times as much, sorry, as the people who don't do that. And that was a Harvard Business School study, I believe. So the point is the goals are critical, and then holding yourself accountable is so critical.
Yeah,
absolutely. Those goals, you know, and those are the actions you take. I mean, back for us, when we started a company, it was making phone calls to potential clients, about 300 a day, and then sending out hundreds of letters a day to those clients. Now it might not be that. It might be LinkedIn messages or emails or something, but quantify it. Quantifiable goals, measurable goals that you hold yourself to each and every day, the way you would working out or whatever it else it is in your life.
But what gets measured gets improved, as they say.
Yeah. What gets measured is what gets managed. Or the way you just said it. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I think it's really pretty fascinating too, that you worked in a very male dominated industry before you got into your own business. And so you had this really interesting situation that you had to deal with. And I remember you saying in the book that you were fixing coffee and doing inventory in the closets for junior people that were underneath you because you were a female.
Yeah. So that was my first job right out of business school. And what happened was I had majored in finance at NYU Business School, because that's what back in the day, everybody or virtually everybody did. 70% of NYU Business School majors were finance majors.
Interesting.
Yes, 70, which is a lot for one major. So I thought I'll do that and combine it with international business. That was my co-major. And then I got a job in the proprietary trading division of a French bank. And I thought, wonderful, I will do finance, which is very stable. It could be very lucrative. I will combine it with equity arbitrage at a French bank. So my love for that, which is international. I will combine it with my love for international, doing it at a French bank. And I walked in and I was the only woman I saw. And there were men who were more junior than I was, and then some at my level. And whenever the phone rang, the guys would yell, "Liz, phone," because I was the woman. And then when I thought, I'll just work harder than everybody else, and then I'll go to my boss and see what else I can do, which is what I did. He said, "Oh, good. I'm glad you're finished your work, Liz. Maybe what you could do now is go around to all the guys and ask them what supplies they need and, you know, order supplies for them and then check in the closet and do the same." So I was being asked to do things that the men just weren't being asked. So I learned very quickly that environment was not for me. And I also didn't like the industry as much as I had adored the language industry. So I quit after only 6 weeks and started TransPerfect. But even in my years at TransPerfect, I experienced sexism. In a number of different ways. And sometimes it wasn't as overt. It wasn't intentional. But I had moments where it was incredibly hard as a member of YPO. I mentioned this in my book, but I was a member of Young Presidents Organization, which was something I joined after we had gotten to a certain size. A company needs to be at least 50 employees and $8 million in revenue. I believe those were the numbers. And we met every once a month, my forum group, and it was me and 12 guys. And that was hard because this was when I had just had my first son. I was pregnant with my second, and then it went on. And the bottom line is I got frustrated because there these guys were, and we were all talking about business and then sometimes personal things. And I felt like, these guys, they have their wives at home, and they pretty much all did, and virtually all of them, their wives were not working. And I finally realized, wait, I'm here with these guys. They don't feel guilty being out. They're happy to be out on a weeknight for 3 hours in our meeting. That's what it was. And their wives are at home with their kids. But I longed for being at home with my kids. So I finally realized, what am I doing here? And even though these guys were very smart, they were all Harvard, Yale, Princeton educated and sharing great ideas, I thought, I need to be at home with my boys. And I quit. So that actually wasn't sexism. That was more, it was a challenge of being a working mom. And so we have to pick our spots. We have to pick what's important.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. In building your company too, you had a lot of opportunities to learn about managing people. And I'd love for you to talk about the key for motivating your employees.
Well, there were, a number of lessons I learned along the way. But I think my basic thought is hire the right people, hire people that are smarter than you, and then give them goals and get out of their way. And that was sort of the way I led that I learned over time. I certainly didn't do everything right from the beginning or even much of anything right. The other thing that I learned was get their input. And I talk about this in my book, the importance of one-on-one meetings. And I learned this because I had someone sitting right outside my office that I dealt with every day. I worked with her every day, and I thought she was great, and I thought we had a great relationship. And then one day she came in and said, I quit, because she didn't see the opportunity to advance. And I thought, wait, the opportunity was there. Why didn't we discuss it? So then after that, I realized I needed to have one-on-one meetings with my direct reports, either once a week or once every 2 weeks. And what I then did in those meetings was ask them how they were personally and made sure they were doing okay. And if they weren't, we talked about it. We talked about what we could do about it. Also asked if they were happy with how they were doing at the company, were clear on their goals and clear on what they needed to do to get to the next stage of their career, assuming they wanted to be promoted or did they just want to stay where they were. And then finally, I said, and how are we doing as a company? And what would you do if you were in charge? What would you do if you owned the company or you ran the company? And that was very valuable. And that was part of how we really had a culture of innovation, where so many of our wonderful ideas were our employees' ideas. And we got them through the one-on-one meetings. We got them through questionnaires that we sent out to our employees, through exit interviews, and through just conversations when we had an event, just casual conversations. So a culture of innovation was absolutely critical. And then we let the employee kind of run with it. If they had an idea, we'd say, okay, great idea. And we gave them the authority, we empowered them to run with it, and then they owned it. And that was a very important part of our culture. Another was the concept of owning it. That was another one of our core values. Treat the company like you own it. And that worked very well too. And if an employee ever had trouble making a decision and they couldn't easily reach out to their boss and didn't know what the right thing to do was always like, what would you do if you owned the company? That was the answer. And then if by chance it wasn't the right answer, they had a good reason and everybody understood. Mm. Yeah.
Well, you also, obviously you're a great leader because you don't build that size of a company without being a great leader. So what are some of the qualities that we should have in order to be exceptional what we do?
Well, I thank you for saying what you said, but I think it's always trying to be better, right? Always trying to learn. And I think the same way I would always try to continually improve, look for employees who are like that as well. But what can we do? I think a lot of it is listening to our employees, right? Listening to their ideas, listening to their feedback. So I think that's critical. Obviously, I mentioned that with the one-on-ones. So being a great listener and trying to hire people that have similar attitudes as far as being motivated, being hard workers, being curious, being innovative, but then, you know, giving them goals, very quantifiable, clear goals, and then getting out of their way. I think that's critical. And caring about them as people, you know, not just thinking of them as a tool. I mean, I think certainly some of those are, you know, those are some of the ideas. Mm-hmm. On being a great leader.
So yeah. In terms of just what you've learned over all of these years, now you're at a point where you've sold your company, you're busy with your foundation, and you're starting to do more things that are more philanthropic. So at what point did you realize that you had this drive to build a foundation?
Yeah, I think after 26 years, I felt like it ended up being the perfect time for me to sell. It's a long time. I wanted to build a foundation. I felt like I had been incredibly fortunate. Yes, I had worked very hard, but I also was born into the right family and I had the right education. And my parents made me work for sure. I was working from the time I was 10 years old and I had many different jobs. But again, right. They were the right role models. They taught me the value of money, the importance of hard work, and they paid for my education. So I knew I was one of the lucky ones. And a lot of us are not in that situation. They're born to the wrong families who don't stress the value of hard work. They don't pay for the children's education. They're born in the wrong zip code. Perhaps they're at a disadvantage because of their race or religion or whatever it is. And so I wanted to give back to all those people and make it so everybody could accomplish their dreams and everybody was treated equally. So that was why. And then I also had seen issues with sexism and people of diverse and marginalized populations not being treated as they should in business. So I wanted to address those as well. And I hadn't had time when I was running TransPerfect, because as we all know, if we're running a company and then we have kids at home, we don't have enough time to do those two things as well as we should. So there was no time. So now is my time to do this. And it is so gratifying. And I think it's so important.
Mm. What is the mission of your organization?
The mission is to help support and empower women and people from marginalized communities.
Perfect.
And that is a huge part of what we do. And then we get into some overlapping causes, like very involved in the American Heart Association. But in our work with the AHA, we are involved in Go Red for Women, so helping support women. And we are also involved in what I have something called the Elizabeth Elting Social Impact Fund, which helps entrepreneurs who are women and people of color who are doing wonderful social entrepreneurship in their communities. Mm-hmm. So even though that's a public health organization, there's overlap. And then we get involved in some other overlapping areas, such as cancer. We're involved in a few different cancer organizations. And then also gun safety, involved in Every Town for Gun Safety and Sandy Hook Promise. And then also Lift Our Voices, which is Gretchen Carlson's wonderful charity that helps people who are at companies, usually women, but sometimes people of color who are put in a situation where they can't speak about what's going on. And then hunger. So there are a number of different causes that we're involved in.
But you've obviously done a lot of incredible things in your life, and all the things you're doing to give back are really important. And I highly recommend that everybody that's listening should get your book and read it, because you'll get at least, 100 good ideas out of the book. So it's Dream Big and Win. And if you were to just wrap up with one good idea that you would like to share with our listeners, what would that be?
One good idea. Oh, right. Okay. It's so hard to say because it depends on a person's situation. But in general, I think about, what do you love doing, or what do you love talking about, and figure out a way to incorporate more of that in your life, whether it's by, leaving what you're doing, your full-time job, and going and starting a business related to it, or if you're at a company and there's a way to incorporate more of what you love into your job at that company, or at least as a hobby on the side. I mean, make sure you're doing what you love and pursuing your dreams, because life is short and we want to make sure we do what makes our hearts sing. And so I guess I would just say, go do that. Take a risk if it involves it. If there is a risk involved from your perspective, just do it. It's so much better to do it than not. And then you will be dreaming big and you will be winning because you are doing what you love in a way that you might not be now.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of our podcast today. And I wish you all great success with your foundations and all the different things that you're doing, and also with your book. Thank you again for being here today.
Thanks so much to you, Gail.
We hope you're feeling inspired to set and reach your goals after hearing this inspiring chat with Liz Elden. Next week, stay tuned for a conversation with Walter Russell, a financial advisor who will teach you a thing or two about managing your business and personal finances and how to organize them so your loved ones can access your finances in an emergency.